Thank you, Steve. Today I'm going to talk about Membrane, operating system support for restartable file systems. I'm Swaminathan Sundararaman. This work is done in collaboration with my colleagues Sriram Subramaniam and Abhishek Rajimwale, and Professors Andrea and Ramsey Arpachidaso and Michael Swift. We actually named the system Membrane, inspiration from Cell Membrane, where we provide a thin layer around the file system in order to prevent bugs from corrupting the kernel state and ensuring that file system is always running and serving application requests. As you all know, bugs are common in any large system, and file systems typically contain anywhere from 1,000 to 100,000 lines of code and are susceptible to bugs too. Recent research work from file systems have developed tools to uncover hundreds of bugs in various components of file system code. And since file systems are a core part of the kernel, a single bug in the file system could potentially bring down the entire kernel. The good news is that file system developers do a very good job on detecting bugs. They're very paranoid about failures. If you look at number of calls to assert, bug, or panic calls in Linux 2.6.27, we see that the file system developers have lots and lots of check across the file system code. But the sad part is there are still calls to bug and panic from file systems where they say that even though they detect failures, they don't know anything about it. So I'm going to make a strong statement saying that detection of bugs is much easier than the recovery in file systems. Now let me try to convince you why recovery is really a hard problem. First reason is that file systems allow concurrency. As a result, multiple applications could be running in the file system. When a single application crashes the file system, the other applications that are currently running in the file system could potentially use the corrupt in-memory object. As a result, the corruption could end up in the other kernel components, prohibiting recovery. There's no fault isolation in the kernel. The second problem is that when processes execute requests into the file system, they could grab resources such as logs from the other layers. And upon a crash, the processes are currently killed. As a result, the return code path, either success or failure, where the logs are released, are never executed. As a result, the kernel could be left in an inconsistent state. The third problem is that the file systems maintain their own in-memory objects, where they typically contain reference counts. In this example, we show the inode in-memory data structure of the file system, where it currently has two reference count of two. On a bug or a crash, it could get corrupted. As a result, the inode blocks can never be freed. To make things worse, they typically have pointers to other metadata structures they actually refer in memory. And when these pointers get corrupted, the other objects can never be freed. So as a result, it's hard to free file system objects when a crash happens. So the common solution that file system developers take is to crash the file system and hope that the problem goes away on an operating system reboot. Unfortunately, the applications that currently use the file system, it loses its states and it has to wait till the operating system is completely rebooted. So one could argue that the correct way to handle this problem is to build a perfect file system where we actually enhance the tool to uncover all possible bugs. Unfortunately, such a tool does not exist. Moreover, fixing bugs are still manual, where developer needs to find out why the bug was triggered and how to fix it. And since file systems are constantly modified because of new features, it's the cycle between the time to detect the bug and to fix the bug is going to be much larger. Moreover, file systems also have to deal with failures in other components that they interact with, and it's hard for a developer to fix a bug if he hasn't seen the error before. So what we believe is the right philosophy to handle this problem is to cope with bugs rather than hope to avoid them. So our solution to this problem is restartable file systems, where we provide Membrane, which is an operating system framework that supports lightweight and stateful recovery for file system crashes. On a file system crash, we transparently restart the file system, restore its state, and also allow the pending applications to continue executing the file system request. It is important to note that applications that currently execute at the time of crash are completely oblivious to the file system crash and continue executing as if nothing happened underneath it. More importantly, we provide a single generic solution that can handle all file system failures, where file system developers need not worry about why the failure was triggered. If on a failure, they could use this as a last line of defense to call upon before crashing the whole kernel. We implemented Membrane in Linux 2.6.15 kernel and evaluated it with three different file systems. From our results, we show that Membrane does a much better job in hiding failures from application compared to the regular kernel. And also we tried with micro and macro benchmarks and show that the additional reliability that Membrane provides almost comes for free. In terms of recovery time, the workloads that we tried, we could restart it less than 30 milliseconds. And for all three file systems, we just added 5 lines of code. This is the outline for the rest of my talk. So unlike any recovery system, Membrane contains three important components. The first component is fault detection, where it helps Membrane detect failure as soon as it occurs in order to start recovery. The second component is fault anticipation. This component constantly records the file system state in preparation for a failure that could happen in the future. Finally, the third component is fault recovery, which upon a fault executes the recovery protocol that cleans up the file system state and restarts it from the state it existed at the crash time. Now let's take a look at each of them in detail. Moving on to fault detection. So as I mentioned before, for correct recovery, we need to detect the failures as soon as possible so that the other kernel code is still consistent. Membrane best handles faults that are fail stop in nature. By fail stop, I mean as soon as the fault occurs, the file system should be able to detect the failure and report it. Since performance is critical for file systems, we do not have any heavyweight protection such as address-based mechanisms. We only use lightweight hardware and software-based detection. In terms of hardware, we catch the null pointer, general protection errors, segment errors that are caught by the processor and redirected to the operating system fault framework, upon which if it's from the file system, we restart the file system through Membrane. In terms of software-based detectors, we actually use the plethora of assert that exist along with the calls to bug on, and panic that file system code currently have, and instead of crashing it, we actually call the restart. It is important to note that Membrane typically assumes the faults are transient during recovery, where it allows all the processes that are executing during the crash time to continue again. In the unlikely event that the fault is non-transient, we then return error only to that particular process, but allow all of the processes to continue as usual. So far, we just saw how Membrane detects failures through hardware and software-based detectors. Now let's look at how does it anticipate for a failure. As I mentioned before, anticipation is nothing but the additional work done by a system in preparation of a failure. The main issue with file system is that it's stateful in the sense that it needs its on-disk state to be consistent for it to restart. And more importantly, file systems are constantly updated by applications. As a result, for improving performance, current systems only periodically write back the dirty data to the disk. So it's for us to recover, we need to find out the point where we need to start from. One possible solution is to make each operation atomic, where you only allow one single operation to continue and synchronously allow the modification to go to the disk. You can see that it's clearly inefficient and acceptable because we're going to significantly limit the concurrency. Other more acceptable solution is to leverage the inbuilt crash consistency mechanism, such as journaling or snapshotting that modern file systems have. Unfortunately, not all file systems in Linux typically have a crash consistency mechanism inside them. So we need to come up with some generic mechanism that could help us to checkpoint the file system state for those file systems that do not have any crash consistency mechanism. So by checkpoint, I mean a consistent state of the file system that could be safely used to roll back in the event of a crash. Before I explain the mechanism, let me give a brief intuition of how we do it. Here we see a simplified version of a storage stack where application, in order to communicate with any file system, have to talk to the VFS layer. And independent of what file system is, in order for it to write the dirty pages, it has to go through the page cache. So the intuition here is that if you can control when requests enter into the file system and when dirty pages go back from the page cache to the disk, we can smartly checkpoint the file system without modifying each individual file systems. So our mechanism is a generic copy-on-write-based checkpointing mechanism. On the left, we just show a regular kernel where applications talk to the file, issue a request to the file system, upon which file system could create a bunch of dirty pages, and the operations immediately return back, and operating system periodically writes back these dirty pages back to the disk. In Membrane, when you want to create a checkpoint, what we do is first introduce a barrier between the VFS and the file system so that we prevent any further operation to be executed inside the file system for a very brief moment of time, and we wait for the existing operations to complete. Once we do that, the state that among the dirt that is in the page cache, which is the dirty pages, along with the state on the disk, form a consistent image of the disk or the file system. Rather than actually synchronously writing these pages to the disk, we simply mark them as copy on write. So once we do that, this operation is all done in memory, so it takes upon a few microseconds to milliseconds, depending on how many pages are there in the memory. Once we do that, we immediately remove the barrier in order to allow subsequent operations to continue modifying the file system. But now we have an issue. We have a new dirty page along with those pages that belong to the previous checkpoint, which is the consistent image of the file system. In order to prevent it, we add an additional attribute for the page where we explicitly allow permission for the page to go back to the disk. Before these pages could go around the disk, the copy-on-write mechanism ensures that we actually create a copy and modify only the new version of the page, not the older version. And we introduce a barrier between the page cache and the disk to allow those pages that have been marked as copy-on-write in the previous checkpoint. As a result, we now have a consistent image of the disk, of the file system on disk. We repeat the same process by creating a checkpoint again for those pages that are dirtied after the last checkpoint, and so on and so forth. So what we have here is that by generic copy-on-write mechanism, we move the disk from one consistent image to another consistent image, and upon a failure, we go back to the last consistent image of the file system and remount it. So to quickly recap, on a crash, what we have is all we need to do is flush the dirty pages of the last checkpoint so that the on-disk state is now consistent, and then throw away all the in-memory file system objects along with those dirty pages in cache, and then remount the file system from this consistent image that we stored in the end. The main issue here is that the state after the checkpoint till the crash time would be lost. So we need a mechanism to recreate the state after the checkpoint. Our solution to this problem is operation-level logging, where we log all the file system operations, including the input parameters and the return values, so that on recovery, we can replay the completed operations that happened after the checkpoint. So we log all these operations at the VFS layer so that this is completely file system independent, and also during recovery, we do not need to have any additional support from the file system to replay these operations. It is important to note that these logs are actually maintained in memory and not on disk unless databases or other file system logs, because we care about crashes due to bugs, not crashes due to power failures. And we only need to keep these logs until the next checkpoint is taken, and we can simply throw away and start logging the subsequent request after that. So far, we looked at how membrane prepares the file system in the event of a failure by copy-on-write checkpointing and also through operation-based logging. Now let's look at how recovery works. In terms of recovery, once we detect a failure, we simply clean up the in-memory state and roll back to the last consistent state of the file system. Recovery process has five important steps. In the interest of time, I'm just going to talk about the first step, which is to clean up the state of partially completed operations. More detailed description is given in the paper, and those of you interested, please take a look at it. So before I explain how we partially clean up the incomplete operations, let me tell you why we need to do that. Since file systems support concurrency, multiple processes could be modifying the file system at any time, and when a crash happens, the in-memory state of the file system could be corrupted. As a result, we do not trust the file system code to be run after a crash. So in order to prevent other applications to execute the file system code, one simple solution would be to kill these application threads, where we only lose the application state, those who are running at the crash time. Unfortunately, this solution would not work because of intertwined execution, where we have, by intertwined, what we mean is multiple calls from to and within the file system within a single operation. Here we see that file system calls back to the VFS layer, where it could have grabbed a particular log, and also could go back to the page cache, where it allocates a particular page. So when the process is blindly killed after a crash, we might not release the resources that have been allocated during that particular operation. Unfortunately, since we don't trust the file system code, it's much more harder because we still need to run the kernel code in order to free up the resources. So we need some other way to cleanly undo incomplete operations. So our solution to this problem is a skip trust unwind protocol where we safely skip the file system code on a crash, but trust the kernel code to clean up its state when an error is returned back from the file system. I just said skip the file system code, but how are you going to do it? The first thing that we need to do is to capture the execution context of the process that are executing in the file system. In order to do that, we have the control capture mechanism where we simply mark the file system code pages as non-executable. So as soon as any other thread tries to execute the file system code, the hardware immediately generates an error saying that, wait, what are you doing? You're trying to execute a page that is marked as non-executable. So as a result, you can control the application execution context. In order to skip it, we maintain an unwind stack where we store the return addresses of the last kernel function along with the expected error value. You can think the unwind stack very similar to an exception stack, which will be only used instead of a call stack upon a failure. Let me give a simple example how a skipless unwind protocol works in practice. Here we take the create code path in ext2, which is a good example of an interwind execution. Here we see that starting from a system call, it calls into the VFS create function. At this point, we need to create the corresponding create function of the file system. Before actually making a call, we first store the current state of the registers, which includes stack segment, instruction pointer, etc., and also the expected error value that the VFS create expects from the file system. And we push it to the per process unwind stack that we maintain. Once we do that, we allow the file kernel code to make a call into the file system code. And then file system could subsequently call into other functions. And finally, because of interwind execution, it calls back into the kernel. Here in this case, it's block prepare write, which before calling into the file system code, again, we store all the register states and expect a return value and push it to the unwind stack. Now it makes the call into the file system. Let's assume that there's a crash happened in the file system because of a null pointer exception or something. So the first thing that we do is mark all the file system code as non-executable. Once we do that, as soon as the next instruction is executed in the file system, it immediately generates a trap. Since it's from a file system code page, we redirect to the membrane infrastructure, which now inspects the unwind stack and sees that the next function that we return back to is block write function. It replaces the registers and mimics an error value returned back from the file system. Now the kernel function assumes that the ext2 getBlock function returned an error, so it performs the corresponding cleanup and then calls back into the previous function that it was called. So here this function is again a file system function. As soon as the next instruction is executed, we again generate a trap. It automatically generates a trap, which gets redirected to the membrane infrastructure. Again, we inspect the unwind stack. We see that the next function is VFS create, and we replace the register and mimic a return value from the file system. Now, VFS creates things that ext2 create returned an error enumum. Then it performs a corresponding cleanup and goes back unwinding the stack. And once we reach the corresponding system call, the top-level system call, instead of returning an error to the application, we actually block the process so that we can clean up and restore the file system state and allow this process to re-execute again. So through skipless unwind protocol, what we achieved is we safely skipped the file system code, but still trusted the kernel code to clean up its state so that we leave the kernel in a consistent state after the crash. So far, we saw part of each of these three components of membrane. Now let's put all of these things together and see how it all works. Here we see that applications talk to the file system to the VFS layer. And for sake of simplicity, we assume that at time t0, file system is an empty state. And on x-axis, we have time moving along. So we could have a lot of operations that could be completed by the file system, and membrane periodically checkpoints the file system state through copy-on-write checkpointing mechanism or leverages the crash consistency mechanism that the file system could have. Once we do that, we allow subsequent operations to continue and still log the operation here, in this case, the write operation, along with the return value, and other operations that could be executing in the kernel when a crash can actually happen. And upon a crash, the first thing that we do is to unwind the in-flight processes to a state it was about to enter into the VFS layer. Once we unwind them, then we clean up the in-memory state. As a result, the write call, which was called after the checkpoint, is lost, and we move the file system to the last known checkpoint. Now, file system is remounted from the state that exists at time t1, and now in order to recreate the state after checkpoint, we replay all the completed operations from the operation log. Once this is done, file system has now reached to a state at time t2, after which we allow the unwound processes to re-execute again so that they actually continue executing as if the failure did not happen the first time. In the event that this fault is non-transient, where the link call again crashes the kernel, we return an error to the link call, but all other functions can continue executing as if a failure did not happen. Therefore, we ensure that the file system can still continue running after a crash. Moving on to evaluation, we wanted to evaluate membrane on four different axes. First one was to see how good is membrane hiding failures from application compared to the default kernel. Second question is, what are the overheads of running membrane when actually there's no fault in the file system? And how easy is it to port existing file systems to work with membrane? And last, we want to see what are the recovery time overheads when actually a crash happens. In the interest of time, I'm going to talk only about the first three things, but the detailed results can be found in the paper. We used a 2.2 gigahertz Opteron processor with 2 GB RAM, and we used Linux 2615, and we added 5,500 lines of code as part of the membrane infrastructure. We actually tried it with three different file systems, EXT2, VFAT, and EXT3. I'll tell you why we chose these file systems later on. The first question is to see how transparent are failures in membrane. In order to find out, we actually manually injected faults in various file system functions. Here we see a part of the EXT3 failure injection experiment, where we see all the different file system EXT3 functions that we injected faults into. This is a small subset. We also did it for VFAT and EXT2. The results are there in the paper. So in terms of fault, the faults that we injected were transient faults, which represented a bug in the file system code, such as null pointer, or errors returned from the other components, such as virtual memory, I/O, etc. And for each fault, we observed the file system four different aspects when the file system was running. The first one is to see how the fault was detected. The second column indicates whether the applications survived the crash or not. The third component indicates whether the file system was consistent after the crash, and finally, whether it was useful or not. For EXT3 on a vanilla kernel, we see that for all fault injection experiments, it generally caused an oops or a protection error. Oops is nothing but a way of file system notifying the operating system, say, hey, I cannot handle it. We should probably let the developer fix this bug. And in terms of application state, it was always killed after the crash, and file system was almost always inconsistent or unusable. We again repeated the same set of experiments in membrane, and we clearly see that membrane does a much better job in handling failures, where upon a crash, once it gets detected, the recovery protocol kicks in and cleans up the state and restores its state when it was about to be crashed. And it also ensures that the file system is always consistent and usable. So in terms of overheads, when there are no failures, we actually tried both micro and macro benchmarks. Here I'm just going to show the typical user desktop workload, which is copy, untar, and make of OpenSSH 4.5. On the x-axis, we see file systems. The red bar indicates the vanilla kernel, and the green bar indicates the membrane file systems running in membrane. On the y-axis, we see time in seconds. Here you can see that running file systems in membrane does not incur significant overhead and has less than 2.5% overhead for all three file systems, which clearly shows that additional reliability that membranes provides to restartability almost comes for free. We also saw this in I/O intensive workloads such as Postmarks 2. Coming on the third question, which is the generality of membrane, we tried it with EXT2, VFAT, and EXT3. EXT2 and VFAT was chosen because they did not have any crash consistency mechanism, and also that EXT2 was developed for Linux and VFAT was primarily meant for a Windows-based system. We also tried EXT3, which had a crash consistency mechanism through journaling. In terms of number of code changes, we did not have to modify or delete a single line of code in each of these file systems. And we added less than 5 lines of code to track the allocation and also to write the super blocks. So we can clearly see that it's much easier to port existing file systems to work with membrane. To conclude, failures are inevitable in file systems, so we must learn to cope with failures rather than hope to avoid them. In this paper, we introduced membrane, which is a generic recovery mechanism that handles all file system failures. For users, it helps them to build trust in newer file systems, knowing that a single bug in the file system need not bring down the entire kernel. For developers, it helps them to ship file system faster because not all bugs need to be showstoppers. And in cases where fixing a bug requires extensive code restructuring, developer could simply call it to restart such that membrane can act as a stopgap arrangement until the actual patch gets shipped in. Finally, what we believe is that our system will encourage file system developers to add more and more integrity checks that would help harden the file system, which actually goes along with the philosophy that detection of bugs is much easier than the recovery, and we have tried to solve the harder problem for file system developers to make their life easier and ensure that the file systems are more reliable. Thank you. I'll be happy to take questions.
So Jeff Kenning, Harvey Mudd College. I think what I just heard you tell me is that I should take this large and complicated file system that has bugs in it and entrust its security and reliability to really what seems to be a pretty baroque and hacky solution.
No. Okay.
And so I'm wondering, you know, you've got this weird unwinding thing and guessing at I/O errors and so forth. Why should I trust my data to that?
Very good question. So the thing is, I'm not saying that you shouldn't trust the file system. It should still be hard and it should still handle the recovery. All I'm saying is this should be used as last line of defense. As a final way, if you're not able to handle the error, it's a simple way to ensure that the file system is still continue to run running instead of crashing the whole kernel, starting the whole operating system, running FSCK, or replaying the journal, and then restarting the application. All I'm saying is it should be used as a last line of defense. I'm not saying that you shouldn't stop improving the file system and making them bug-free or not. It's just it adds addition to it, rather it doesn't completely remove the need for failure handling in file systems. It just adds an additional level of protection, that's it. So I'm not saying you should completely blindly trust it. You should definitely trust that the file system is more reliable.
I guess it seems to me that what you're offering me is the ability to not reboot, and perhaps if I'm really concerned about my data, I would rather reboot.
Yep.
Rick Spillane, Sternberg University. So I'm assuming that you've already figured out how to cooperate with EXT3's journaling. Like, so for instance, if someone calls fsync, then you force a checkpoint in your system.
Yep, that's right. So for EXT3, since it's a journaling file system, what we need is we actually modify the JBD layer. If you look at the four lines of code that we changed, So typically this indicates when the transaction begins and when the transaction ends, so that we can safely throw away the logs in memory, because on a crash, the log is again, when you remount the file system, the log gets replayed because of the journaling layer that EXT3 has, and then we can start building up from that point.
Okay, second question real quick is, your system trades basically memory pressure because you're going to be holding these copy and write pages, but none of your benchmarks are really stressing memory pressure. You're doing a lot of serial reads like untar and copy.
No, that is it. We actually
so did you do any kind of analysis where you actually have to use all your RAM, like for random reads or database workloads?
No, we didn't push it to the brink of it. We just still ran I/O intensive workloads, like such as Postmark, and we still see that the. Sorry.
But Postmark is not necessarily going to cause a lot of.
So it's more of a desktop workload. But I don't think you're going to use it for a regular day-to-day operation. Not like going to push it like not going to make it run to the extreme. Of course, when you're going to push it to the extreme, where you have going to have memory pressure. The system is going to, you're definitely going to see performance degradation because of a lot of pages written as copy on write. But one other thing that you should note here is that if the pages are going to be overwritten within the small interval that we actually flush it to the disk, then we are going to create a copy on write. It's not for all pages you may need to create a copy. It's only copy on demand and not copy always. So it need not always put pressure to.
Reza Doc, Stony Brook University. You protect the code pages of the file system so they're not executable. Wouldn't there be some other code that doesn't belong to your file system that you're preventing from executing, perhaps code that you care about?
That's a really good question. So we actually assume that the file system is a loadable kernel module.
Okay, so it's only...
All code pages are much easier to detect.
Okay, so it's only for loadable modules. Or we could
actually make the change in the compiler so that when the kernel is compiled, all the file system code page are aligned in 4K page and isolated from other components. We need to add support. If you want to make it a part of the mainline kernel, not as a loadable kernel module, so you need additional support from the compiler to ensure they are in separate pages.
Okay. And how do you prevent your in-memory log from bugs that are going to scribble over random memory in kernel?
We don't prevent. That's why we said a lightweight protection, where if you look at the first... Okay. Image, that first slide, I actually show one bug outside the file system. So if you have to have address space protection, then we can probably prevent it. So here we just provide a lightweight mechanism so that we can still survive some sort of crash, but not all crashes.
Okay.
Okay, Jacob Hansen, VMware. So I was going to ask about the memory pressure thing, but That's already been said, so I just wanted to say I don't find this hacky at all. I think it's really cute, and I really like the way you unroll the threads. So good luck. Thanks.
Thank you. And I'll be happy to take questions after this, too. So.
A quick question, but maybe a hard one. Jason Flynn from Michigan.
Can you take it offline?
No, you might not have an answer to this. So your system, there's been a lot of work about the practicality of generic recovery. And it boils down to how common are failures that are both fail-stop and transient? And do you have any data for how common that is in file systems as opposed to other types of failures?
That's a tough question. I'll tell you why this is tough. We actually wanted to look at some error, real-world error, so that we can actually motivate the problem. But when we started doing a bug study in file system, unfortunately, how it works is that people send a mail to the mailing list for the file system development list. And typically, when you report a bug, all they say is the bug has been fixed, the patch has been sent. They never say why the bug occurred, how it occurred, or how it was fixed. We have no idea and no clue how it is. What we believe is that it additionally provides support. We never know how much it's actually used in real-world practice, but we believe that's a true value addition to existing systems.
Sure. Offline, I have some suggestions on where to start, but it's a hard question.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to do that for NextFast, and hopefully I should be able to do it.
Okay.
Thanks.